the U.S. Department of Transportation's Position Report and Vision for the Future. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome in to this special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. When U.S. Transportation Secretary Mary Peters appeared at General Aviation events in 2007, she focused on a fairly straight-ahead sales job for the Bush administration's user fee FAA funding agenda. There was some of that in her opening comments at the 2008 FAA Annual Forecast Conference, but she also had some comments of value if you want to know where the government thinks we're headed. So today, for good and bad, we have her comments for you, starting with her introduction by FAA Acting Administrator Robert Sturgill.
Please join me in welcoming the Secretary of Transportation, Mary Peters.
Thank you. Bobby, thanks so much for that kind introduction, and thank all of you for being here at this very, very important conference. Before I begin my remarks on the forecast, I want to address some media reports of serious allegations that FAA inspectors knew about safety lapses and yet allowed them to continue. These stories raise questions about the safety of our aviation system, and let me start by saying the best way to measure the effectiveness of any safety system is to closely examine the data that is available to you. And the data that we have today tells us that commercial aviation is safer than it has ever been before. And that fact is due to a lot of you in this room, but certainly the FAA staff as well. And indeed, the most recent data from the National Transportation Safety Board shows that U.S. Airlines had a 0.1, this is 0.1, major accidents for every million hours flown. And that confirms the fact that we are in the safest period of aviation that we have ever experienced. But yet, as encouraging as the safety data is, these are significant allegations, and we need to address them quickly and thoroughly. We take very seriously any allegation from within the FAA or outside the agency that safety may have been compromised. And that is why I have asked FAA Acting Administrator Sturgill and his entire leadership team to get to the bottom of these allegations and find out if there is any merit to them at all. If any inspector failed in his or her responsibilities to the traveling public, they will be dealt with swiftly and severely. There is simply no margin for error when it comes to the safety of our aviation system. Now let me turn to the forecast. At this point in the day, you've heard the numbers already, and they are astonishing numbers. We know that the passengers are coming, over 1 billion passengers by 2016. And we know that by 2025, revenue passenger miles are expected to more than double, increasing by an average of $50 billion a year. That's the equivalent of adding another carrier the size of Northwest to the system every 18 months. We know that even a slowing economy and record oil prices, and they certainly are record prices, we're looking at passenger growth of another 1.5% this year in spite of those facts. We also know that our aviation system is straining to handle the 2 million passengers who already take to the skies on a daily basis. Last year's congested skies brought a 10% spike in delays, and in pure numbers, we're talking about more than 540,000 flights that did not take off or land on time. That's an all-time record, albeit a rather dubious record, and one I know we together do not want to meet or exceed in the future. Now, if you flew in 2007, there was a better than 1 in 4 chance that your flight arrived late. Even more troubling, the severity of those delays, the ones that flyers faced, reached an unprecedented level. Almost 1,600 flights took off more than 3 hours late, up 24% from the year 2006. As delays have increased, so too have consumer complaints. We heard from over 13,000 unhappy airline passengers last year, and most complaints were related to flight problems, delays, cancellations, and misconnections. Americans who lived through one of the worst travel seasons ever in 2007 might look at our forecast and fear that new travel nightmares are in their future. But I'm here to tell you that growth forecasts do not have to mean worsening congestion and lengthening delays for travelers. I'm here with a rather different kind of forecast as I talk to you today. We can look forward to dependable flight schedules, on-time departures, and arrivals. We can put an end to the emissions, wasted fuel, and passenger headaches that come from lengthy delays on the tarmac. And we can have an aviation system that safely handles the growing number of passengers who want to fly across the country and indeed around the world. Key to this forecast is unleashing the power of the market to better allocate capacity and to steer investment decisions. Pricing is the quickest, the most effective approach to help spread flights throughout the delay and alleviate congestion at peak hours. But it can also generate new revenues, revenues that airports can use to expand and accommodate the forecasted passenger growth. And properly pricing traffic services to cost can help us ensure the most efficient use of airports, airfields, and airspace, and provide the surest path to expanded capacity and put desperately needed technology in place. There's nothing exotic about this approach at all. In fact, phone and electric companies balance supply and demand by adjusting their rates during peak usage hours. It is this very concept that led to free nights and weekends from cellular providers. Airlines themselves smooth out peak and valleys in demand by varying ticket prices by time of day and day of the week. And applying this same concept to the services provided by airports and air traffic control services has tremendous potential to make today's broken system more predictable, more reliable, and of course more convenient to travelers. Over a year ago, we sent Congress a very comprehensive plan for transforming our air aviation system to meet not just today's, but tomorrow's demands as well. A central part of that reform was overhaul of FAA's financing structure so that we could provide price incentives for system users to reduce delays and to facilitate equipping our aviation system with modern next-gen technology. Our proposal features provisions to specifically target the most congested regions with market-based mechanisms, such as congestion pricing, auctions, and to reduce airport delays and crowded airspace. And I continue to stand ready to work with Congress to help pass an FAA reauthorization bill that is consistent with the administration's reform proposals. Gridlock gates underscore the need for a new day forward. A new way forward, replacing the status quo systems, policies, and taxes that have produced the current congestion crisis. Making flying a much more pleasant experience for all travelers is also a top priority for President Bush, and for me as well. Passengers simply don't have the luxury of waiting on Congress for relief, and we're not waiting either.
We'll hear more from U.S. Transportation Secretary Mary Peters in a moment. I'm Paul Plack. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR22 GTS, Cirrus's premium luxury ride that has come to define Cirrus aircraft as one of the world's elite. Every dream option from supple leather seats to an exhilarating 310 horsepower performance and speed come standard, giving new meaning to the phrase fully loaded. When flying the SR22 GTS, getting there is truly more than half the fun. To learn more, call 888-750-9000 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design. Clarity Aloft headsets employ patented Comply Canal tips, composed of soft viscoelastic foam, the same foam tips used in advanced hearing aids. More than simple earplugs, these foam tips provide full-spectrum noise reduction and outstanding attenuation. This advanced technology is lab-tested, proving that viscoelastic passive noise reduction is superior to active noise reduction. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
Welcome back. We're listening to U.S. Transportation Secretary Mary Peters from the 2008 FAA Annual Forecast Conference.
We are moving forward key elements of the satellite-based next-gen system from design to delivery, and we're doing that this year. Bobby spoke earlier about our investments to accelerate next-gen, and I'm announcing today that we have selected Florida as the test bed for this transformational technology. The Southeast has a good mix of traffic, a good mix of weather, and is just the kind of place to put NextGen through its paces. Flying to the home of Tomorrowland does not have to be a lesson in today's traffic tie-ups. By putting the latest technology on our towers instead of in our nation's theme parks, we're going to help make getting to Florida a model of the future. And starting this summer, we're going to roll out NextGen technology at Daytona Beach. In Miami, we will be employing a descent technique that allows us to save fuel, noise, and reduce emissions. The national debut of ADS-B technology, the very backbone of NextGen, also will begin in Florida. Adding ADS-B coverage in the Gulf will allow planes to fly closer together without compromising safety. Today, we have to keep planes apart, anywhere from 10 to 15 miles apart. But with ADS-B, we can reduce that down to 5 miles, freeing up needed capacity. NextGen is also very crucial to our long-term strategy for keeping up with forecasted growth. We've also moved toward aggressively implementing short-term actions designed to ease congestion and to help passengers. These include a series of rules to protect passengers and a new task force focused on helping airlines and airports do a better job of coordinating with each other and taking care of passengers in the event of lengthy ground delays. But let me emphasize here, our goal is to not make that wait more pleasant, not just to make that wait more pleasant. Certainly we want to do that, but preferably we want to prevent that wait on the tarmac in the first place. And we've had some success in using military airspace, such as we did for the holiday fast lanes at Thanksgiving and Christmas last year. And we're also exploring a more permanent mechanism for activating this option to ease tie-ups. Charles Everett is on the job as the acting aviation czar for the New York region, the source of so many delays. He is helping to keep the airspace redesign and other operational improvements to reduce congestion and to prevent delays on track. We could do even more if Congress enacted the market-based reforms that we have proposed. But even in the absence of that legislation, we are pursuing changes to our policy on landing fees designed to empower airports to take advantage of pricing to encourage more efficient use of their airfields, to reduce congestion, and to attract additional resources to expand capacity. We know that the aviation market responds to these types of price signals. In 1968, the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey imposed a $25 minimum charge for peak hour use of runways at JFK, LaGuardia, and Newark airports, with an almost immediate impact on congestion. Our proposed policy changes signal congested airports that they can move away from the decades-old practice of charging airports' landing fees based solely on the weight of the aircraft, a disincentive for flying larger planes, even when those planes would provide the most efficient utilization of the airport. With this policy in effect, airports would be able to use pricing to spread traffic demand more evenly throughout the day, or even among the neighboring airports within the same region, allowing them to serve more passengers, to reduce delays, and to offer new options to customers. We're making tools available to bring airports and airlines together to address delays. The alternative is to have government intervene with the kind of emergency action that we were forced to take in the New York region. Hourly limits on flights out of JFK go into effect later this month. And today I'm announcing an agreement with the airline serving Newark Liberty Airport to temporarily cap flights at an average of 83 per hour during peak periods. Even with caps, we are putting market mechanisms in place. As capacity grows at Newark and we're able to add slots, they will be auctioned off. This auction approach encourages competition, allows new entrants, and makes sure that customers get the flights that they truly want and value. Now, let me be clear about another point. We are not requiring service cuts. Airlines will be able to shift their flights to times of day when Newark has unused capacity. Overall, the caps at Newark will allow 30 more operations per day than were offered last summer. They just will be more reasonably spaced throughout the day. And I want to thank the airlines for your cooperation in reaching this agreement. But ultimately, however, and I've said this to you before, these are not the kind of negotiations that we prefer to have. But we do have an obligation to travelers to do everything that we can to prevent a repeat of the horrors that they experienced last summer. Ideally, the problem of congestion would be tackled at the local level. And later this week, I will be sitting down with the country's most congested airports to discuss how we can address the problem without the intervention of federal government. But if airports and airlines can't manage congestion at the local level, we have to step in, because congestion in a few airports cascades around the continent very quickly. And I'll give you an example. We had a 10-minute delay for 15 jets approaching Newark one day last year. Within just 20 minutes, another 250 aircraft, some as far away as Chicago, were affected. And if we remain on our current course, if we refuse to let the market work for passengers, then we are guaranteed more Newarks and more JFKs in our future, not a goal that I subscribe to. I believe that there is a better way, a significantly better way, that will allow us to accommodate the growth while we're modernizing our system without crippling congestion and without debilitating delays. Market-based mechanisms can encourage airlines to spread their flights out more evenly during the day, to make better use of neighboring airports, and to move the maximum number of passengers on every flight. The passengers are coming. We've heard the data. I've repeated the data this morning. Let's make sure that we all together are taking full advantage of the most effective tools at our disposal to get them to their destination smoothly, safely, and on time. Before I close, let me take the opportunity to thank Bobby Sturgill for his tremendous efforts as acting administrator at the FAA, and something else I hope Congress will act on very, very soon is to confirm Bobby for a full five-year term so he can provide the kind of leadership to FAA in the future that he is providing today. Thank you all so much for the opportunity to address you today.
There you go, a snapshot of where the U.S. Department of Transportation wants to take us, and perhaps an incentive to renew your AOPA membership. Mary Peters is the U.S. Secretary of Transportation, and you can find video coverage of the presentation you just heard in the archives at www.aero-tv.net. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.